members, good morning, and the ESCOM Anchorage. Mr. Dames, good morning, you and your team. You are more than welcome. As usual, I think we have long seen each other, so we have forgotten who is here. We will introduce ourselves so that we know each other. I'm Priscilla Temba, the chairperson of the Select Committee on Labor and Public Enterprises, representing Mpumalanga in the National Council of Provinces. Members will introduce themselves, then ESCOM will do likewise.
Thanks, Chair, and good morning, everybody. I'm Boisela Jacobs, representing the Free State in the National Council.
Good morning, everybody. Dirk Fjordman, member of the Select Committee, Gauteng.
My name is Patsy Vande from Malanga Province.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Herman Groenewald, representing the Northwest Province and member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Renelle Barreto, and I'm the researcher for the committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Kumele Lesilisi. I am the committee secretary.
Brian Dormus, the Chief Executive of ESCOM.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Solofelo Molefe, Group Executive Customer Services at ESCOM.
Good morning, Jose Shuem, Corporate Affairs.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Veron Kipps, Corporate Affairs, ESCOM.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Mapelo Mbunelwa, Parliamentary Affairs, ESCOM.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Karen de Villiers from ESCOM.
Honorable Chair and Members, my name is Nombi Limatomela from ESCOM.
Chair, Jungus Bumbi Limaputi from PMG.
Morning, everyone. My name is Siyabonga Mkhwanazi from the New Age newspaper.
Research unit.
Okay, members and ESCOM chief executive, our agenda today, we will hear presentation from ESCOM on the multi-year price determination application 3. And then members, we've got minutes to adopt afterwards. This is our last meeting then, therefore we really have to adopt this minute. I'll hand over to ESCOM, who's going to lead us. Thanks. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. We have handed out to all of you the presentation. It's in a booklet, A5 format, and we hopefully will get it on the screen as well. So that we can refer to that. Chair, if you would allow me, we can start while we get the screen going, and I'll refer you to the booklets, and I will refer you to the slides, and Chair, would you like me to finish the presentation and then open up for questions, and then we take questions right at the end?
If you can finish the presentation, then members will ask questions afterwards.
Chair, thank you for the opportunity for us to present our MYPD3 application. This is the same presentation that we have used in all our engagements as we have submitted our application in October of this year. Chair, I refer the members to slide 4. At the bottom of the packs, you'll see the slide numbers. And really highlights the point that for this multi-year price determination 3, that is what MYPD3 stands for. 3 because this is the third application of Eskom. We've had 2 cycles, the first one lasting 3 years, the second one also lasting 3 years, and that is now coming to the end. And very important to note that this is the beginning of a public process. Eskom has made no decisions. The decisions in this regard will be made by the regulator, and this is at best the beginning of a process. The electricity tariffs are decided and are regulated in South Africa by the National Energy Regulator, NERSA. It is an independent body, and they decide on the tariffs, and we are regulated by NERSA in terms of what we can charge to Eskom customers. And I think it's very important to note that it only applies to what we can charge to Eskom customers. It does not deal with all electricity consumers in the country. It deals with what we can charge. The current 3-year tariff cycle will end in March 2013, and therefore Eskom must apply now for the new tariff cycle. It will now allow NERSA to elicit comment from the public, and NERSA will also conduct extensive public hearings, and we as Eskom has actively and continue to actively encourage the public to participate in the process and to engage with our application. The application has been made available through what we have been doing to presentations to Parliament. We have made it available to the media when we submitted our application. Our managers have engaged in all the provinces in the country with stakeholders. We have engaged through the national radio stations and community radio stations to explain this and really ask people to engage with the application, together with having quite an extensive set of information on our website, where analysts can actually download the numbers and analyze it themselves. And it's available on our website. On slide 5, the application, the origins and what we have done is align the application with the State of the Nation address of this year. And I quote out of that address, it says that it's very important that we have a tariff application and a tariff path in support of economic growth and job creation in the country. And we need an electricity price path which will ensure that Eskom and the industry, the electricity industry, remains viable, financially viable and sustainable. But we also need tariffs that remains affordable, especially for the poor in the country. And that is the essence of what we've attempted to achieve in our application. Find a balance to make sure we support economic growth and job creation, and balance that with a viable Eskom and a viable industry, and make sure we protect the poor in this process. Chair, on slide 6, what we have done as Eskom is certainly very important that we all understand that we're planning for a South Africa that will be growing, a South Africa that will continue to need electricity and investment going forward, and a South Africa that will be successful going forward. So it's very important that we look at this in terms of the long term, because we are a long-term company. The things that we build today will last for 60 years. So it's very important that we have a very clear view around our future. So why then the tariff increases? And many people ask me, when will this come to an end? When will you actually get to no tariff increases? And I think it's an important point that I'd just like to note. is that we will come to tariff increases. The end will be defined when electricity tariffs goes up at the level of inflation. Not zero. It will go up at the level of inflation. So we should always remember that. So we should not look at Eskom's application and says, how does that compare to zero? But you should compare that against inflation. Now, if we assume 6% inflation over the next few years, then really we should, through this presentation, be talking to what is the difference between 6% inflation and what Eskom is applying for. But why do we need the increases? Our application ensures that we can cover the cost of supplying electricity that's needed to power South Africa and to invest not in Eskom's future but in the country's future. Now, it's very important that we do understand that we have to cover the cost that we incur in order to supply the electricity from that perspective. And I'll go through the different cost elements in quite a lot of detail. On slide 7, in terms of the bottom of that slide, what are the costs? We secure resources to run our existing business. We have, and members should understand, Eskom is one of the largest power companies in the world. Eskom's generation fleet is over 40,000 megawatts. We generate more than 40% of all the electricity on this continent. Our transmission grid is about the size of Western Europe. We serve 4.9 million customers in South Africa, and we have hundreds of thousands of kilometers of networks. And that is our existing business. So we have to make sure we can pay for the coal, and coal is our biggest cost. Half of Eskom's cost is coal. The coal cost is not cost that Eskom incur for itself. This is what we pay the big mining companies in South Africa. Anglo, Billiton, Exxaro, Shanduka Coal, Kemba, all of the coal companies in South Africa. So coal is the biggest part of our cost. The second part is the maintenance of our system. The third part is for our people, our human resources. And we have to make sure we support the financing of the new capacity. We do not use the tariffs to pay for the investments that we make. We use the tariffs to make sure we've got sufficient funds to support the financing, and we finance our expansion through raising debt in the South African market and in international markets. And that debt comes with it, both a need to repay the debt and a need to pay interest on the debt. And I'll take the members through that in more detail. As well as, for the first time, to introduce independent power producers, while at the same time we make sure we protect the poor within the country. Then on slide 8, as a summary, it is very important that we must understand that it's essential for South Africa to have a stable supply of electricity to make sure the economy grows and that we improve the quality of life. The biggest thing that, the biggest failure we can have as a country is not to plan for electricity expansion, and not to implement the projects, and not to maintain it. The cost of the country not having electricity is larger than the cost that we have to pay to make sure that we have security of supply. And the current prices of electricity does not cover the full cost of supplying electricity. And for decades, South Africa has seen electricity prices increasing at levels lower than inflation. And so for decades, we've never adjusted the electricity price. And over the last few years, all we've been doing as a country is correcting those decades of under adjustment, and we ran out of capacity, and now we have to invest. So we didn't adjust electricity prices, and we did not, as a country, invest in new capacity. And what we're doing now is making sure we see the continued migration to cost-effective tariffs. We certainly recognize the impact of the tariff increase on the economy and on households, especially small business and poor in the country, and we have worked hard to seek the right balance for the country in this regard, and I'll talk about that later. We have suggested that we, instead of looking at a three-year tariff path, that a five-year path would be more prudent in order to smooth the impact and to provide certainty. So instead of adjusting prices over 3 years, let's do it over a longer period of time and then make sure that we have a gradual, smooth impact in terms of the prices. We've looked very hard at our own costs for efficiencies, and I'll go through that in a lot more detail. And we have constrained the increases on coal and our operating costs within this application, because it's very important from our side, together with the mining industry, that we work on the coal costs, and secondly, on our own cost structures within Eskom, and making sure that, that we're efficient in that regard. On slide 9, we have provided for the costs then of using and replacing our assets and servicing the debt raised to fund our investment in the new infrastructure. It is very important that the costs of using the infrastructure and replacing it is covered through our depreciation costs. So depreciation is there to make sure that by the time our assets need to be replaced, that we certainly have the money to do so, and that we have sufficient money to service the debt. By the mid-year of this year, we've had over 200 billion rand worth of debt on our balance sheet. That, and I'll show later, will yield capital and interest expenses over 14 or 24 billion rand a year worth of interest. Now, that's quite significant. We have to have enough cash to pay back the interest. It's like having a salary sufficiently to pay back the interest on your home loan every year. And I think that is a key point. I'll deal with that. The application, for the first time, will also include the introduction of independent power producers. That will come in three phases. This is the Department of Energy's renewable program of 3,725 megawatts and the Department of Energy's peaking plant of 1,020 megawatts. So for the first time, Eskom is not just applying for itself. It's actually applying for a government decision to introduce renewables and to introduce private players to the market. And the Department of Energy ran this process. We have received from them both the cost and the energy, and that is what we've put into our application. So the result of all of this is Eskom is only applying for 13% for itself, for our own needs to run our current assets, to produce 95% of all the electricity in the country, to expand our current stations up to our Celia power station. We need 13% on average for the next 5 years. That is for coal. That is for operating costs, for maintenance. That is for manpower costs. That is to cover our interest, and that is to cover the depreciation costs. Then we add in the 3%. The 3% has been added in addition to that to introduce the independent power producers, giving us a total of 16% per year for the next 5 years. It's also very important to note at the bottom of that slide that we've included in this application a long-term price path that shows what it will take to implement capacity beyond Kusile Power Station. We know that South Africa has to continue expanding and investing. So if we take the integrated resource plan and actually cost that in terms of the tariff, we have given an indication in this presentation. But it's important to note that we've not included that into our revenue requirement for the next 5 years. So we've not applied for that. We've given the country an indication of what it would take. We know it must be done, whether we do it or somebody else does it. It must be done. And it will have an impact on tariffs. But those decisions has not yet been made, and therefore we've not included it in our application. On slide 10, we then look at carefully as to the need for the increases. It is very important that Eskom and the industry, and it's more than just Eskom, it's now other players in the industry, need to recover the cost of producing electricity. As I said, that includes operating costs, coal, maintenance, and employee costs, as well as the cost of financing new capacity. Cost-reflective tariffs are important to ensure that as Eskom and as the industry we're sustainable, and really that we do not burden taxpayers. Either the taxpayer pays for this or electricity users pays for this, and that's very important. But it's also crucially important that we provide confidence to lenders and investors. Chair, as I've indicated, we have 213 billion rand on our balance sheet.
That is debt, money that people lend to Eskom. That includes South African institutions. It includes international companies all over the world, pension funds that has put money into Eskom, the World Bank, African Development Bank, DBSA, and it's very important that we have a tariff path that gives people confidence that we will be able to repay both the debt and the interest on the debt. And to give members a sense of the debt, we raise long-term debt because our assets are long-term. Our assets last 40, 50, 60 years. More than 60% of our debt is more than 10 years. Some of this debt goes out to 2041. So by 2041, we should be able to give people confidence that we'll be able to repay the debt. And that is crucially important from our perspective. But it's also important that we protect the poor in the country. And we do that through targeted subsidies. Currently, within the electricity price structure in South Africa today, there are subsidies included, and I'll take you through that. And we suggest that those subsidies from high-consuming customers to low-consuming customers continue, and we would also argue that it should increase. So those that use more should pay more to accommodate those that use less, and those currently exist within the tariff structures. Chair, on slide 11, we have done a lot of economic models as part of this application. We have commissioned universities to do work around this, economists to do work around this, and all of the models has indicated that it's better and fairer to pay for electricity through tariffs and not through taxes, and that is quite important. Secondly, that is very important to have the right price for a product, and in this case for energy or for electricity, and that will make sure that the energy will be used efficiently wherever it's used. So if it's used efficiently, we have less of a need to invest in massive capacity because you use the product optimally. If you just leave something and somebody uses inefficiently and subsidizes it within the economy, you find this massive need for making investments to keep up with the demand. And so that is crucially important. It's also important to highlight that the right tariff will also support investment by independent power producers and by Eskom. And I'll take members through that as to the returns required. South Africa decided in 1998 that Eskom will not invest in electricity expansion. That is the Energy White Paper. And so the private sector will do that. The one thing the country never did is fix the electricity price. So nobody invested. And even up until today, we don't invest it. And the ones that are investing are getting a special price that is a contract price and not the tariff that we charge to our customers. And I'll take the committee through that. So it's very important to support investment. We need to get to the right price. Then it's also crucially important that the regulator we have in South Africa has got rules. They've got a regulatory framework. And those rules only allow for prudent costs. So the regulator will go through a process of evaluating our costs and make sure it's prudent and make sure it's efficient. And that is their role, and that is what they will be doing. So it's important that Eskom spends the money wisely in terms of the revenue. On slide 12, we give an indication of our assumptions. The first assumption that is crucial to the tariff increase is what will happen to the demand of electricity. And we've assumed that the demand of electricity, our sales, will grow at 1.9% on average for the next 5 years. Now, to give members a sense that the integrated resource plan for that cabinet approved for the next 20 years assume electricity growth of 3%. So this is lower than that. For this year, for the first 6 months of this year, we've seen an electricity growth of negative 2.9%. For last year, we've seen an electricity growth of 0.9%, or I think it's 0.2%. So it's electricity growth currently in the country that is indicative of the slow economic activity, as well as
the demand side programs as well as the industrial action we had on the mines is pretty much negative or flat, and we've assumed 1.9%. Now, the 1.9% equates most probably to a GDP growth of just over 3%, or close to 3%. So if the country grows faster, we'll obviously have to relook at this specific assumption. But it's also important that the country pack is required between us and the mining industry to keep the coal cost increases to no more than 10%. We've assumed that the coal cost in this application will increase on average every year by 10%. Let me tell members why that's important. As I said earlier, half of our cost is coal. For the last 3 years, we have seen annual coal cost increases. On average, every year, it's going up by 18%, 1.8. For the first 6 months of this year, it's gone up by 17.7%. And we assume that for the next 5 years, it will only go up by 10%. So a lot of work will have to be done to make sure that coal cost gets to 10%. And many people ask me, now, why don't you apply for electricity prices at levels of inflation? Now, I can say to the committee, we cannot apply for inflation-linked tariffs if the coal cost goes up higher than inflation. It would mean that as Eskom, we would subsidize Billiton, Anglo, Exxaro, and all the big mining companies. But it's also true that if the mining industry today comes to us and says they will give us the right quality of coal, the right volumes of coal, and will only increase the coal cost at inflation, that we as Eskom will adjust our application, provided they're prepared to sign off on that. It's also important to note that we in South Africa regulate electricity prices through NERSA. That's what this process is about. The biggest input cost into electricity is coal cost, and it's unregulated. So you have an unregulated coal industry, and you have a regulated electricity price, where the biggest input cost in electricity price is that of coal. So we have assumed that we do need a pact with the industry to contain the cost of 10%, and I'm quite willing to change our application if the coal industry is prepared to reduce their coal costs to the levels of inflation. We've also assumed that we'll continue to work on an energy conservation scheme to support us making sure the light stays on and the demand don't grow too fast. And as I said, we've assumed the five-year price path that will allow us a gradual move towards cost-reflective tariffs. Chair, on slide 13, we then detail to you what the tariff pays for. And the biggest part, 33% of the tariff, although 50% of our cost is coal cost, 33% of the tariff goes towards primary energy. And primary energy, we assume, will be increasing on average at 8.6%. And within primary energy, coal will go up, as I said, by 10%. So that's the biggest part of the cost. The second biggest part of the cost is our operating cost. And we have assumed that our operating cost will increase by 8%. So now we assess the difference between inflation at 6 and these cost structures. So inflation at 6, primary energy at 8.6. The 2.6% difference is primarily driven by the 10% increase in coal costs. In terms of operating costs, 6 versus 8. We've assumed there's two big components in the operating cost, our maintenance cost and our manpower cost. We've assumed our manpower cost will increase at inflation, so it is not that. Then the next question is what causes 8%, and it's essentially caused through the maintenance. Our plant is older, it needs a lot more maintenance, and certainly our cost in maintenance does not increase at inflation, and it increases above inflation. The next two big areas is depreciation, which will go up on 10% on average per year. And depreciation is the charge that we charge in order to make sure we get the funds to replace our assets. And by 2020, between 2020 and 2030, Eskom will be decommissioning over 10,000 megawatts of its existing power stations. All of that will have to be replaced. And therefore, one has to make sure that we have sufficient funds in order to replace that, and that we do not go through exactly what we've gone through now, seeing massive adjustments in electricity prices. The 17% also goes to return, the returns that Eskom will earn, And that return is sufficient enough for us to cover our interest expense and our capital expense. There's not much of a return that goes back to the shareholder, which is government. The other two components is the IPPs. That increases by 42%. That is not for Eskom's use, but for the use of independent power producers in the private sector. We enter into those contracts. We connect these customers in 20-year contracts. And the regulator sets the price, or government sets the price, and then we pay for that to the private sector. And then 1% will go to the integrated demand management program. That is part of our energy efficiency program that is run throughout the country. Chair, on slide 14, we are acutely aware of the impact of tariff increases on the economy, particularly poor households. We recognize the need for us to balance these objectives of ensuring a secure, stable electricity supply, a financially sustainable industry, and the need for the economy to grow and create jobs. For the protection for the poor, what we have done is we do that through a tariff structure that is transparent in terms of the cross-subsidies. As I've indicated earlier, we have cross-subsidies currently within our tariffs. And for the first time, Eskom not only applies for its revenue requirement or the percentage increase, we will also give proposals to the regulator as to how we should structure the actual tariff the different customers will pay. And we have been asked that we should look at different sectors in the economy because companies would close. Now, it is not our role as Eskom to decide which sectors of the economy, whether manufacturing or smelting, should be protected. It is a role for economic policymakers to do that. We as Eskom cannot decide which sectors of the economy should be prioritized. And therefore, it's an economic policy that should set protection, if required, for specific economic sectors within the economy. So to conclude, what we need is an average increase of 13% over 5 years for Eskom's own needs. On top of that, we add 3% to make sure we see the introduction of private sector, which we have to pay for and South African consumers will have to subsidize. And that will also see the first large-scale introduction of renewable energy within the system, giving us a total of 16%. Chair, on slide 16, we give the committee an indication of our value chain as Eskom. To give you a sense what really happens when you flick a switch, Eskom's value chain is extensive. It starts from the coal that we have to procure, the water that we need. We have power generation that is including hydro generation. We have coal-fired stations. We have nuclear stations. We have gas turbines. All of that feeds into our transmission networks. That feeds into, as I said, that's extensive. That then eventually gets to large customers. That takes it off the transmission networks and big mines. But to the households and the businesses, that takes it off our distribution networks, and in many cases from the municipal distribution networks. So if I go through our value chain step by step, and the first one is in the primary energy part of it. And as I said, coal is 56% of the total primary energy cost at Eskom, and is the biggest part of our input cost. We've assumed that coal cost increases have been double digits, as I said, over the last few years, 18%, due to the fact that the mines are aging, and quite simply due to the fact that our coal has a higher price outside of South Africa than it's being used inside of South Africa. And it's a key issue for the country to deal with, and we do need a pact to contain the coal cost increases. If you can't contain the coal cost increases from the mining sector, we cannot contain electricity tariffs. Chair, we also give you an indication of our coal contracts. Eskom has secured 80% of its coal for the next 5 years. And actually, beyond that period from 2018 onwards, there's a big issue for the country to deal with. Most of our coal is our existing cost-plus mines. 37% of our coal is supplied by cost-plus mines right next to the power station.
where we pick up the costs. So if the cost on the mine increases, we pay for that, and that filters to the tariff. We have multi-product mines, that's 30% of our coal, medium-term coal contracts of 23%, and new long-term coal contracts, that's 10% of our coal supply. And so that is really the area. And all of the coal contracts are either with the big mining companies within South Africa. The second part of our value chain is the cost is generation, power generation. And really in terms of the revenue that we need, generation's revenue requirement represents 75% of the total revenue application of Eskom. So it is the biggest part of our cost base. And this includes the cost of us generating power from our existing assets, as well as managing new assets. Now people are saying our manpower numbers has gone up. Now, if we build a big power station like Medupi, we do not employ the people the day that the power station starts running. We actually employ the day the power station starts being built, because we have to train the people. And so we do have a lot more people, and Eskom is growing. It is adding more than 50% more capacity in terms of generation power. It adds 155,000 new customers every year in terms of electrification. And it's building, has built over the last few years over 4,000 kilometers of new transmission networks and substations in the country. Now, the company is growing, and we do need people to deal with that. So this includes the cost of maintaining our plant as well. And if you, Chair, if you can see at that table, it gives you the age of all our power stations. Our power stations are supposed to last 50 years, and we're currently putting plans in place to extend their life to 60 years. And most of our stations are in the middle of their life. Most of them are 30 years old. On average, the fleet of South African stations are 30 years old. They need more maintenance, and they need longer time for maintenance. And so that's crucially important that we maintain these assets in order to make sure we have reliable electricity supply within the country. And that's why our maintenance cost has been going up and will continue to go up, and we will not compromise on that. Chair, on the next slide, we then deal with the independent power producers. Also on the generation side, but not Eskom generation, private generation. Eskom is committed to make sure, and our role is to connect these customers to the grid, so we will actually connect them to our distribution networks and our transmission networks for them to use our networks. We do support the fact that as a country we need to reduce our carbon emissions, and we then as Eskom will have to buy the power. So Eskom entered into the contract with the private sector. It's a 20-year contract. The price is set, and it does not change other than go up for the next 20 years. Now, I think there's something that we should realize, is there's no such thing, whether in South Africa or anywhere else in the world, that if you have green energy, you're going to have cheaper energy. It doesn't work like that. We can see the cost, and it's on that slide. We're going to pay, on average, for the IPPs, the cost will go up from 1 rand 25 cents to 2 rand 32 cents. Over the same period, the cost from Eskom generation is 23 cents. So we're going to buy power. Currently, we're selling power at 60 cents. And at 60 cents, it covers our generation costs. At 60 cents, it covers our transmission costs. At 60 cents, it covers all our distribution costs. And at 60 cents, it covers our depreciation and our return. That's what they currently sell electricity at. Now, just for the generation part from the private sector, we're going to pay them on average for the next few years 2 rand 12 cents, compared to Eskom's power station that's producing currently at 30 cents, or will produce at 30 cents. But that is a choice that the country has made, that the country has said that it wants renewable energy. And this is not unique to us as a country. It happens in Spain. And so all these foreign companies are so excited about what's happening in South Africa. It is correct, because nothing is happening else in the world, and we're certainly going to pay for that as South African consumers. And that's what we have to include in our price application. This money does not come to Eskom, and it will go to the private sector. Now, to give you a sense, the solar photovoltaic will cost us over 2 rand, and wind energy will cost us 1 rand 74. for every unit of electricity produced. That's before we put transmission and distribution costs to that. We have already signed as Eskom 1,000 megawatts with independent power producers, and we're currently paying for that 77 cents for generation costs that we're currently buying for people that we buy electricity from. The second part, the third part of our value chain is transmission. Transmission's revenue requirement is 7% of the total revenue of Eskom. As I said, our transmission networks are quite big and extensive. If the members can imagine our transmission covering about the size of Western Europe across our country. And from a transmission perspective, it's very important they look after managing the power system and make sure the power flows throughout the country and the light stays on. The fourth part is distribution. Distribution is the largest part of our business. Distribution's revenue requirement is 18%. Eskom has in total almost 5 million customers. And really, distribution are the teams that are out there making sure that the electricity gets into our households, from the big transmission networks into the substations, into the residential areas, into the different communities throughout the country. And I think it's very important to note, as Eskom, we only supply about 40% of the end-use customers in South Africa. The biggest amount of South African households are supplied by municipalities. Our customers, we sell about 46% of all our electricity we sell to municipalities. Then we sell to big industry and to mines. And all of these own customers only make up 5% of our sales. Very small portion. So the 4.9 million customers we have only make up 5% of our sales. And for those customers is what we have our distribution business that service with those 4.9 million customers. On the customer side, we supply bulk, as I said, bulk electricity to the municipalities, who then sells to residential and business customers directly. And it's very important to note that the tariffs we're talking about here is what Eskom charges Eskom customers. Municipalities charging their customers is up to them. They have some guidelines from the regulator in that regard, but essentially municipalities has got a constitutional right to supply those services. So it's very important that we know this is Eskom's tariffs for Eskom customers. We directly supply the large mines and industries in the country and 4.5 million households, which is mostly on prepaid electricity. We do have cross-subsidies in the tariff structure that we use to cushion poor households, and we'll take the committee through that. We also have a massive construction program. Our planned investment over the next 5 years is 337 billion rand. It includes our capacity expansion and upgrading of our current assets. And to give the committee a sense that about half of the 337 will go to our big projects. The rest of it, actually most of the capital over the next 5 years will go into transmission expansion, will go into distribution expansion, will go into refurbishment and upgrading of our existing assets. And that's very important to note, that we're really now in the peak of our expansion and our big projects, and that will, over the next few years, actually come down as they're getting towards a conclusion towards the end of 2018-2019. Madupi and Kusile's build costs, we have checked this again, and we presented clearly that the benchmarks are in line with international benchmarks, so we're not paying more than what anybody else would pay in the world. On completion, we would have added, like I said, 11,000 new megawatts of capacity. We will add more than 9,000 kilometers of new transmission lines in the country and 41,645 MVAs of new substations in South Africa. And at the same time, we currently create over 40,000 direct jobs in our through our BOLT program. We have 12,000 trainees and a lot of trainees in the BOLT program, and we have 63% of our current contracts on the BOLT program going to South African companies. So this expansion program and infrastructure program is directly focusing on local job creation local skills development and local supply industry development. But we also contribute towards the life of South Africans. As I said, we employ a significant amount of people on our BOLD program. We have 12,000 learners. We spend more than most companies on black economic empowerment, 72 billion rand. 63% of all our contracts has been placed on South African companies to create South African jobs and South African industry. We've connected over 4 million households. South Africa now has 83% access to electricity. In 1991, before Eskom started, that's less than 30%. And we run one of the world's largest energy saving programs. 57 million energy saving bulbs has been shipped, and we've now installed 285,000 solar water geysers in the country. The next section, Chair, I'm going to actually ask Solofelo to talk through the tariffs. She's looking after customer services, and then I'll come back and I'll talk about just concluding and some of the financial numbers.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just in terms of the tariff, once the regulator has done a determination on the revenue requirement, we then translate that revenue requirement into tariffs for different customer categories. So that if you go to page 26, just to give an indication, I think as Brian indicated that we have made sure that we propose and continue that there is targeted protection for the pure to make sure that they do not feel the impact of high electricity prices. So when you go into page 26, you will notice that we have now, in terms of the tariff categories for different customers, has split these tariff increases. So on average, we would move from a 60.8 cents increase, 60.8 cents to 70.6 cents, making it a 9.8 cent increase, which gives you a 16%. But when we actually split it, you will notice that your municipal tariffs will increase by 7.6%. And then your large industrial and commercial, which is what we call the urban customers on urban tariffs, will see an increase that is higher than the average increase of 16% at 11.7 cents. And that is because they will be carrying the cross-subsidies that we've been talking about. And then on the rural customers, you will notice that they will see an increase of 15.2 cents per kilowatt hour. At 15%, just slightly lower than the 16% increase. And then with regards to the residential tariffs are primarily still on IBT at this point. What we're proposing is that we restructure the tariff so that your low consumption, poor household users who primarily only use very few appliances, who are on 20 amps, for the first year of the MYPD would actually see a reduction of 1% increase. And this is because we're actually proposing that we move away from the traditional IBT tariff, which had four block tariffs, and that they would see a single energy charge, which we call a lifeline charge. Or for that first year, they would see a reduction in their increase in the tariff. And then we have the low to medium consumption customers who are primarily 60 amp customers, 60 amps. They would then see a 4.2 cent increase in terms of per kilowatt in terms of the increase, making it a 5% increase in the first year. And then we've proposed that they actually move from the four block tariff to the two block tariff. What is important here is that we encourage the customers to actually conserve their energy. So it would work if they actually contain their consumption up to 600 kilowatt hour per month, and we'll show you later on. And in terms of the high consumption users, and this is mainly your affluent residential customers who also use, most of them use three-phase meters and so forth, we're suggesting that we keep them on a home power tariff, and they would see a 15.3 cents increase, but they would also contribute to a network charge, which currently they are not. So the intention here is to make sure that we categorize within our residential customers, that we don't have an IBT tariff that is a one-size-fit-all for all customers. We recognize that
these customers have different usage patterns, and therefore the lower consumption customers should actually pay less than your higher consumption customers. And then on the next slide, Chair, slide 27.
Chair, I just want to make a comment on that slide. Firstly, that these are the customers Eskom supply. So it's not, this owner our customers. Most of our customers, most of the 4.5 million residential customers on prepaid of Eskom uses electricity and falls under the first two blocks, 20 M or 60 M per batch. And so those customers will for next year see not 16% but a minus 1% increase. And the higher customer will see only a 5% increase. And that's important to note. And also important to note that we're only applying for next year for 9.8 cents increase on electricity per unit. So the 16% that we all talk about is actually an increase for next year of 9 cents, 9.8 cents per unit of electricity.
Okay, and then on the next slide, slide 27, what we want to highlight here is that although our small customers actually pay a higher price per unit, in fact, the cost to supply them is much higher than it is for large customers. And that is, we recognize the fact that your large power users, in fact, the cost to serve or the cost to supply is much lower, and it's determined really by the voltage level and so forth. So they actually do subsidize your smaller customers. And you will notice in the table there that the cost reflective tariff for your customers, for example, if you go to the home light 20 and tariff, the third last column, you will notice that these customers would actually receive a subsidy of 112 cents, 0.88, because their average price, as indicated by the blue graph there, is actually 75.58 cents. However, the cost to supply them would be 188. So then they would receive the subsidy. Likewise, your home light 50 amps and home power residential, as well as your rural agricultural. And these subsidies would be then carried by your large industrial customers. As you can see, the large industrial customers would actually contribute to a subsidy of 7.58, and that is the largest subsidy that they contribute to, and it's primarily due to the residential tariff or the inclining block tariff. The municipal tariffs also do contribute, and these are the municipal customers that are on the large power users of the municipal customers who actually contribute to the subsidy. If you go to page the next page, Chair, that's page slide 28, we're just indicating that we've had quite a number of subsidies in terms of protection for the poor, and the current existing mechanisms include one, the IBT tariff, which was based on the four-block tariff, and it meant that the lowest block experienced a below-inflation tariff increase during the NYPD2. The free basic electricity, which is the free units that your customers would get that have been identified as indigent customers, that would mean that other parts of the customer sectors would have to carry that subsidy. And also the rural electrification subsidy and support for energy efficiency. IBT, as we said in the past, we are concerned that it has had some unintended consequences in that it has been very complex for our customers to understand. It didn't cater for the multiple dwellings on one property or those backyard dwellers, and it wasn't really targeted in that high consumption customers also benefited. As I indicated, that we're now proposing that your high consumption customers should not actually get the same subsidy that your low consumption customers are getting, and therefore it has resulted in some unsustainable cross-subsidization from large customers, and we see that there is an increase. So we're therefore proposing, as I've indicated, to simplify and refine this current residential tariff. So for the low-consumption prepaid customers, as I've indicated, we would replace that with
single lifeline tariff, and likewise on the home light 60 amp tariff, customers would only have a two-block tariff as opposed to a four-block tariff in terms of the current IBT, and of course the high consumption residential customers to be reintroduced to a fixed energy charge. So slide 29, Chair, indicates what that price increase would translate into for different customers. So if a customer is actually consuming 100 kilowatt hour per month, and they would see an increase of 8 rand per month from 2012-2013. And if they're consuming 400 kilowatt hours per month, they would see a slight reduction in the first year of the MYPD. But when you go to the home line 60 amp, you'll notice that the increase actually increases significantly the more you consume. So if you're on 100 or even 400 kilowatt hour per month, you'd only see an increase of 2 rand. But the minute you actually go beyond 600 kilowatt and get to 1,000 kilowatt hour per month consumption, you notice that the increase significantly increases. You would see an increase in your bill of 167 and even more the more you consume.
I just want to stand on that point. As I said earlier, most of our customers uses not more than 400 kilowatt hours. Most of the people in the townships, the 4.5 million customers Eskom has. So they will see for next year, if they use 20 amps, they will see a 2 rand increase in their bill if they use that. I, at my house, uses 1,500 kilowatt hours a month in my house. So in my house, I'll see most probably 170 rand increase in my bill. So the high-end users are really will be paying more, but really our consumers, our residential customers, will not see the 60% increase and will actually see quite a marginal increase, the single digits over the next 5 years.
The next slide, Chair, just indicates some of the cross subsidies that we have indicated and how they have evolved over the years. You will notice that in 2012-13, your urban customers contributed 9 billion to subsidies, and it actually increases in the 2013-14, in the first year of MYPD, to 11.3 billion subsidization. I think what's important, Chair, is that we do understand the impact as well of these subsidies to our customers, particularly the large customers, and we're saying that it is going forward not sustainable. And we have proposed in the MYPD that we actually have a national subsidy framework that would be very structured, looking at who the beneficiaries are of these subsidies, what it does to the contributors of the subsidy, and so forth, so that it's very structured, targeted to those people that we want to get subsidies, and that it's not just a one-size-fits-all as it's currently. Because the important thing is that we also do not outclass our customers out of the market in terms of jobs and so forth.
Chair, if I can turn the committee's attention to slide 32. Slide 32 indicates the Eskom funding model. And it's important that we get money from only three sources. We can get it from the revenue, which is the tariffs. We get money from borrowings, or we can get money from equity. And that's the only three sources that we have. And really, the regulatory model is the one that focuses on the revenue part. Borrowings is what we do in international markets, and equity is the support that we would achieve from government. Now, that is the only sources of funding that we have from that perspective. So if we look at slide 33, and really the question is now, what are we applying for? So if we go through all of the different cost structures, the first one, as we said, is primary energy. And for us to pay for primary energy, including our demand-side program, which is the 8.6% increase, it will mean a total of 355 billion rand. So the committee must understand Eskom does not apply for 16% increase. Actually, Eskom applies for a revenue. We apply for rand amounts of revenue that, given the sales, how much
Now, 355 billion rand will go to primary energy, of which the biggest portion, as I said earlier, is coal. So that does not come to Eskom, that goes to the mining industry, it goes through our demand market programs that we run. 78 billion rand will go to the private sector for us to pay for renewables. So over the next 5 years, South African consumers will pay 78 billion rand to the private sector for wind energy and for solar energy. 270 billion rand is for Eskom's operating costs. That includes our manpower costs and our maintenance costs. That's 8% average increase over the next 5 years. 13 billion rand will go to independent of our demand market, demand side management program. That's the energy efficiency program. Then 185 billion rand to depreciation. So that is depreciation over the next 5 years. And the return on assets that Eskom will earn by the end of this period is 7.8%, and that amounts to 187 billion rand. And that is how our revenue requirement is made up. That gives the revenue increase then of 16%. And at the bottom of the table, we're given an indication of what happens to the Eskom price levels for what Eskom needs. Nominal indicates, including inflation, means electricity will go from about 61 cents in the country to 112 cents. In real terms, that means in today's terms, excluding inflation, electricity will go from 61 cents to 84 cents. And if we have to then include the private sector, then it will go from 61 cents to 128 cents, nominal and real to 96 cents. Chair, on the next slide is the same information provided graphically. So that is the revenue requirement, primary energy, IPPs, the demand market participation, the import of energy. We import electricity from Cabora Bassa and other areas. Employees, 135 billion rand to employ to employee costs, additional costs over the next 5 years, making up only for adjustments in inflation. 13 billion rand for demand maintenance, 76 billion rand. So we're going to spend, if you would equate our maintenance cost with the 76 billion rand, for 98% of the energy over the next 5 years that we will be maintaining, we'll be spending 76 billion rand. For 2% of the energy we'll be buying from the private sector, we'll also be spending 78 billion rand. So that gives you a sense of those costs. Operating costs is, other operating costs is 59 billion rand. Our debt, we will have to pay back our debt cost over the next few years, 140 billion rand depreciation, and then our equity returns and our depreciation. So that is a breakdown of the costs, Chair. In that slide, we then provide, as we indicated to you, how the revenue is made up, depreciation and returns, as well as operating costs and the primary energy. The return portion goes pretty much to cover our interest costs over the next 5 years. So there's not much return back to the shareholder. It really just covers the interest cost. The operating cost, as we said, will escalate approximately at 8% a year. And we have built-in efficiency savings for ourselves. And the capital, 337 billion rand. Primary energy, 8.6%, and 10% a year, including the IPPs. And at the bottom of the page, the committee can see how the revenue, that means the electricity costs, go from 61 cents. That includes our returns. It includes the primary energy, which is the biggest part, the red part, the employee costs, which is the green part, the depreciation, the purple part, and the operating costs, which is the light blue part. And that is how the 61 cents is made up, and that will increase up to 128 cents, as we said, in nominal terms by the end of the period. If we then turn to primary energy costs in a lot more detail, the graph will indicate that increases on average by 8.6%. The biggest part of that is the blue part, which is generation primary energy costs, which is essentially coal costs. The red part is the independent power producers that increases over the 5 years. And you can also see this year's component, so the committee can see what happens this year to next year. And then the green part is other primary energy purchases, which is essentially demand-side market participation that we have. So the success really of this assumption assumes that coal cost increases by no more than 10% on average. We've spoken about the IPPs, and we've spoken about the imports that we then primarily get from Akabora Basa. On slide 37, if we look at our operating costs, the blue part is really the biggest part of the operating costs, and we assume an average increase of 8%. And the committee can see the decrease there for this year, and that's essentially because in demand side, the second bullet there, the integrated demand management program that reduces by 7 billion. We've put more money in for this year to spend on demand side management. That will drop off. We have set ourselves a savings target of 30 billion rand over the next 5 years. So there's a lot of work for us to do to make sure that we can maintain our efficiencies in the company, not compromising maintenance over the next 5 years. And as I said earlier, our employee costs, we assume, will only increase at levels of inflation. We recognize it's something that we have to negotiate with trade unions as we negotiate salaries, but that is certainly the objective. Chair, on slide 38, we give a perspective of really the whole issue around historical cost appreciation. We as Eskom currently apply a historical cost appreciation. So if we look at our balance sheet, you'll see that all of our assets that I spoke about is valued just over 300 billion rand. To replace, to build one new power station is 100 billion rand. So our current assets do not reflect the actual replacement value. So it is the regulator does look at our depreciation based on a historic, on a replacement valuation. That means what will it cost today to replace these assets, and that is the depreciation charge that we should then be charging. And what is very important is what we're actually going through now is really putting in new assets, and because we've not depreciated our assets correctly, we have these price shocks. So it's very important going forward that we do shift our, as a regulator has ruled, towards replacement cost depreciation. That will make sure we prevent these sudden changes in price shocks within the level of electricity prices. And that brings me to slide 39. Depreciation costs will then see double-digit increases. It's escalating above inflation due to the fact that we apply the principle of depreciated replacement valuation of our assets. That is aligned with the electricity and pricing policy of the country. And it's a critical factor to make sure we move towards cost-effective tariffs. And it helps us build up earnings to fund future expansion and replacement of our assets. This methodology is also supported by the rating agencies because it's crucially important to ensure sustainability within the electricity industry. Then if I turn to slide 40 in terms of the returns, the returns are currently negative, and that will migrate to 7.8% by the end of the 5 years. And the return caters for both our debt and our equity costs. We will generate positive returns of 187 billion rand over this period. The returns will be lower than what NERSA has actually set as the return target for Eskom, 8.16%. And it's lower than our weighted average cost of capital, which is at 8.3%. So the return we will be earning at the end of 5 years is less than our actual cost of capital we currently have to use to raise money in our debt markets. And after paying for our finance cost of 140 billion rand over the next 5 years, there's only 47 billion rand that remains behind as a return. So our interest charge and our financing cost over the next 5 years is 140 billion rand. And people do ask Eskom that says you're currently making profits, how do you deal with that? Now, the profits that we make currently of 12 billion rand last year and this year, first 6 months of 12 billion rand, is not enough. And on the next slide, we can see that on slide 41. When you look at the interest, the profit that we make of 12 billion rand is not enough to pay 1 year's worth of interest. So it is crucially important that Eskom does earn a return in order to make sure
we have sufficient money to pay back this interest. And there we can see the balance, the interest and the capital we will have to repay over the next 5 years, the returns we will be earning, and what is left is 47 billion rand that is left for the shareholder, which is government. But this is also very important from a rating perspective. Eskom currently as a company, and the committee would know that Eskom has been downgraded, together government has been downgraded, and Eskom obviously and many SOEs has followed suit. And as a standalone company, if you look at Eskom on a standalone basis, we're actually not investment grade, we're actually sub-investment grade. That is the blue bars for both Moody's and Standard & Poor's. And the only reason why we triple B and Baa3 is because of the government support. So government support makes a difference between the green and the blue. And it's very important because we do have strengths as a company, that we have a dominant position in the market. We are supported by the government in terms of support. But we have a lot of debt on our balance sheet to execute the country's growth program. The tariffs are not fully cost-reflective in the short term. There's regulatory risk in terms of, and then also the IPPs that comes that we have to pay for. So it's very important that Eskom makes sure that it achieves financial sustainability. And on slide 43, we then give the committee an indication of two key ratios. These two key ratios are firstly our total debt over to EBITDA, which is our earnings before interest, tax, and depreciation. So that's crucially important that our total debt to EBITDA reduces, and the target is that should get to 3%. And then the next is our leverage ratio, which would look at our free funds and our total debt, and that needs to achieve 20%. And Chair, the tariffs are crucially important to make sure we earn the revenues so that by the end of this period, we achieve a standalone investment grade rating. That's crucially important to make sure that we can use Eskom's assets to raise the money for the expansion, and we do not put pressure on government in terms of funding the bulk program. Chair, if I then turn to slide 44, which now for the first time gives the country some long-term scenarios as to what it would take to implement the Integrated Resource Plan 2010, we were given two scenarios to model. The first scenario would be, what if Eskom builds 65% of the additional capacity and the independent power producers 35%? And then we also ask to model a scenario where Eskom builds all of it, 100% of it. And we have given the assumptions that we've received from the Department of Energy, and the committee can also see the different assumptions for the different technologies, nuclear, coal, gas, wind, solar, and other renewables. That would mean that if we have to apply for that on slide 45, it would mean that we would need for the next 5 years a tariff of 20% for every year, thereafter 9%, and only in 10 years' time from now, we will get to, in 2024, we will get to electricity tariffs closer to inflation. Now, we have indicated this, and we've also indicated what happens to the real price of electricity. It will go to about 1.10 rand versus 60 cents today. And it also, the blue line there indicates actually what has been in the plan when this plan was approved. So our modeling aligns with what was actually in the IRP when it was promulgated in 2010. That also indicated at that time that electricity prices will be in real terms at 1.10 rand. And the green line indicates the nominal tariff path. Like I've indicated, Chair, we've indicated this as a scenario because it's important the country see what it would take, whether we invest or somebody else invest, what the price of electricity would be in order for us to continue investing in electricity in the country. We have not applied for this. We've just provided this as an indication because none of these decisions has been made yet. Chair, in conclusion, and then I think we should open up on slide 46, I think it's very important to note that this is not a decision, as I said in the beginning. This is the best a process. The decision will be made by the regulator in South Africa. They will finalize, they will hold public hearings in January of next year. That's the indication.
They will finalize their decision in February next year, and they will have to submit that the municipal tariffs to Parliament, I think, in March. And the new tariffs will be applicable for Eskom customers on the 1st of July and for municipal customers on, for Eskom customers on the 1st of April and for municipal customers on the 1st of July. As Eskom, we have been, we've remained committed to an open and a very ongoing communication around this process. We have actively urged customers to engage with the consultation process as far as this is concerned. So on slide 48, it's very important for us to note as a country that a stable and secure electricity supply is essential to support economic growth and development currently and into the future. Without that, we have no hope as a country that we will see any development in South Africa. Tariffs, from all the work that we have done and many others has done, is the fairest way and most efficient way to pay for electricity. There's no other funds. Nobody else, even if they invest, somebody has to earn a return. Somebody's money has to be paid back. To ensure that the industry invests in the infrastructure needed and to deliver electricity where we need it, prices must cover the full cost of producing electricity. People have asked me, what happens if the regulator don't give you the tariff increases? Now, if the regulator would give us, let's say, zero increases, we will stop buying coal because we can only buy the coal that we have cost for this year. So we'll buy less coal next year because the coal costs will go up. We will not buy enough coal. Our coal stockpiles will reduce from 44 days, and we will keep on burning the coal in our coal stockpiles. We will run out of coal, and we will shut our stations down. If they don't give us sufficient tariff increases, we will stop the capital. We will stop our big projects. We will stop investing in distribution and in generation or transmission upgrades. That is the consequence. So whatever is happening, and we will not be able to pay back our loans, meaning that government guarantee will be called and the South African government will have to pay back the loans. These are massive implications, and we as a country should seriously understand what are the consequences around this. So if we do not achieve a full cost recovery, we will have to reduce our expenditure, quite simply. We will cut down our capital. We will have to only buy enough coal that we have today. And obviously, if we do not have enough money to pay back even the interest on our debt, that will have a significant implication. We know that this has to balance the impact of tariffs on the economy and the poor, and I think, Chairman, we've demonstrated to you how we've designed the cross-subsidies to make sure the poor sees not the full 16% and that our communities actually see a lower tariff increases. We have worked quite hard on our cost. We've committed to a 30 billion rand saving over the next 5 years versus what the business actually wants. Our increase is 13% to cover Eskom's costs and 3% for the IPPs. And if we have to include expansion beyond Kusile, so if we implement the IRP, we would need actually not 16% tariff increases, you would need 20% for the next 5 years. As Eskom, certainly we're committed that as a country we have to move towards cleaner energies. We understand that. We fully understand all of that. But as a country, we have to make the choices now. It does not come with cheaper energy. It is not more cheaper. It is more expensive. And we have given you the cost. But it is very important that we do find ways to move towards cleaner energy mix, that we improve our energy efficiency in our own operations and those of our customers. The best we can do as a country is to save energy, because that's still the cheapest way for us to deal with electricity challenges. We know that we can't meet the country's needs alone. We need the private sector to invest, and that needs to be paid for. We must ensure that the solutions that we find meets the needs of affordability, that supports the aspiration for local job creation. So whatever we do, we must make sure we create local jobs, local supplier development, and grow the economy. But we also recognize that we do need to make as a country decisions on the future, and those decisions are urgently needed, and it requires serious consideration. We should look at the regional options within the Southern African region. There are many other options that we don't have, like hydro, that should be explored in order to meet our future energy needs. Quite simply, as Eskom, we have now given the committee and the public an indication of how much it will cost for us to build nuclear and all of these other things. We do believe, as Eskom, that we should look at potential game changers as a country, and that would be gas generation, either from natural gas or unconventional gas, or what we call shale gas. It is important the country do look at all of these options, because if we don't, we're going to be constrained in terms of our energy options going forward. And here we believe that our application has really gone some way to strike a balance between what South Africa needs today and how do we protect the vulnerable in our country, as well as what we need in the future. And again, we have urged our customers very actively to engage with our application. Chair, I thank you, and I think that's the end of our presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Damis. Members, that was the presentation of MYPD3, 2014 to 2018. And I think, and I hope that after engagement, we will be able, because we are now going on constituency period, we will be able to engage with our constituencies to be able, after clarification from Eskom, to be able to explain. Over to you, honourable members, honourable Groenewald, honourable Felsman, honourable Dipier, honourable Sibande, followed lastly honourable Jacobs, in that order.
Thank you, honourable Chairperson. Firstly, I want to know what is the purpose of public hearings regarding the high tariffs. Then I want to know, are Eskom really listened to the public and the consumers when we have these public hearings? And I want also examples. What are you doing regarding this complaints from the public? And then the other thing in our oversight visits, we saw it a lot of times, where people is really getting electricity from the poles, and actually they steal the electricity. And what is the policy of Eskom regarding these thefts on electricity in our informal communities? I think that is the most places where they take the electricity from the poles. And this one, actually, you answered it, Mr. Damas. What is Eskom's vision for the future regarding new options to get electricity? And then I'm asking, excluding coal power stations. There is a lot of other resources, you mentioned it only, but I want to know where are we going into it? What is the nearby future regarding other options? And then... I just wondered, to whom belongs the coal fields in South Africa? We buy the coal from these companies, and to whom belongs it to? Then I also want to know, slide 19, I counted these 11 power stations you mentioned there on the generation. But I wanted to know in which provinces are they, and is it only these 9? I think maybe there's more. And then also in the northwest province, there's a power station close to Pretoria, Moretele. It was used by the UCDP in President Mangope's time. That power station is closed. What happened there? Are we not going to use it again?
My
last question, Honourable Chairperson, is only, is Eskom on track with Medupi and the Kasilu power stations? we visited also Medupi, and they said that in 2013, I think it was very early in 2013, the first phase will be getting onto line. Is it still the case? Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. I'd just like to thank the CEO for the reality. Really, it is bad. It just tells me another story that most of our SOEs are in trouble. I mean, there's no way out. We need an increase. If we don't get it, we're down the gutters. Secondly, I would just like to know the IPPs, the regulation of them. I mean, those guys are coming from foreign countries and investing in our country, taking a bulk of money out of it. All they do is just to merge up with PE companies, but the majority is going to them. Why? If I understand it, is that they actually like a competition towards ESCOM. So, I mean, why did we allow that? Secondly is the old story, and nobody can give answer on it, especially two major mining companies, which you supply electricity so cheap. It's an old contract signed in those days. But where can we get in and break the ice? I mean, 12 cents to that and 12 cents there, and how people on the ground must pay that much. And thirdly is, fourthly, there's another two to come. The nuclear. I mean, can we have a look at that as well? Thank you, Jefferson. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, as the presenter says in his presentation, that the poor society are being considered in terms of the increase of the tariffs. But my question is, how does ESCOM protect that poor community when they, in terms of the conditions of the licensing to the major distributor? Because it seems to me it's not been protected there. In the other sectors, people talk about price fixing. Because, you know, he says 46% of his distributors are the municipalities. But municipalities also do these things of markups. Some of them 100%. So which means your protection of the poor in your own tariff requests are becoming a fruitless exercise. Because if the person must pay then double the money in terms of the municipalities which you don't have control over, I think that is my major concern. I'm saying in other sectors people talk about price fixing. Isn't that the same thing at the level of municipalities? Then the other one, 10%, is that I don't want to mention the municipalities which I think are culprits in it. With the explanation of the presenter, I'm under the impression that for the next 20 years we will never be an independent SOE without the grants of the state. That is what it's clear. Because I'm difficult to understand when we will be getting at the stage where we're going to have the inflation rate as a benchmark. Because in society, whatever we're doing, inflation rate is always being the benchmark. But it seems to me here, it's not even going to realize the next 20 years in terms of the outline. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, Jefferson. The time of your presentation, I was losing my eyes. But when I closed my eyes, I saw something in my vision, which might be a challenge. For an example, your application to NERSA covers the completion of the Gusile coal-fired power station, in the 2018-2019 financial year. What happens about capacity beyond 2018? And then the question which was asked by my colleague, Baba Umu Losugumayo. You see, what is worrying me about is the issue of the municipalities as you are part of your suppliers. You know, you said from your own input, the increase, I think in one of the slides, which talk about customer, increase per customer category, something like that. You said increase, overall increase is 9.8%. And then you said municipality 7.6%. So what is worrying me? Why the ESCOM is allowing that the electricity supplied by municipality instead of by themselves? Because to me, it seems that it's double charging. Because it might happen is the increase which is by you, which is 9.8%, and also an increase by the municipality itself as a supplier now of 7.6%. So where do you protect the poor? And my worry, from your own input, you said approximately your infrastructure is cost about 330 or 350 billion, of which you said to repair it will cost more than 100 billion rand. So what is my worry that I'm happy because you covered the issue of some of your sources, like you spoke about hydro, nuclear, gas and solar. But I had a hope that when we introduce a nuclear is very much expensive to do it, but to sustain it, it's cheaper. I thought nuclear will play a role to sustain, to replace, instead of asking for increment. And again, which was raised by you next to me, I've got a little funny experience. Not to say that the people are stealing electricity, there's people in the townships, in the poles only. Also in farms, the farmers. What mechanism, what system do you have? And can you tell us exactly how many watts or kilowatts are we losing in that practice? Because I think ESCOM doesn't have a mechanism to monitor its own electricity. That's why we were having a problem. Because, besides, like in the farms, there are lots of farms which are abandoned, which are still, there is electricity, but the farm is abandoned. The owner is staying somewhere, whatever. People are getting electricity there. And then also, which is worrying me, you see, I thought like the issue which I've raised, the issue of Kapora Basa, which is hydro, also was going to solve. I don't think it cost that hard. 100 million to construct it again or reconstruct it again, because there is quite difference because the structure and also the structure of the coal plant, whereby you go to your mills, I can name them names in the power station, if you talk in terms of power station, if you are meaning of reconstruction of the power station, turbines, coal plant, ash plant, whatever, but with the hydro it's different. And also with the solar, it's a different. With the nuclear, it's a different. Because nuclear, you're using sea as part of resources in terms of water. Now, another thing which is worrying me, I don't get you exactly when you said that you are the ESCOM resources. You spoke about revenue and borrowing and equity. You know, I don't make this elaborate how to marry the three. Because every time you are borrowing, where is the ESCOM profit? What are you doing with your own profit? Instead of borrowing. And also there's a vice versa. You spoke about subsidy. Instead it's the government who subsidizes you in order to produce electricity. That's vice versa. That to me is that's a contradiction. Because if you talk about subsidy, that's something else, that you are assisting people who want to drill. Instead, the government is assisting you. Where are you, what are you doing with our own, we own profit. And then, I'm sorry, Mama, I think I wanted to go to the last one.
You see, also, I thought that, I'm subject for correction, I thought that because I was supporting the idea of the nuclear power station, I thought that you were going to say that, like the example which you are putting, which were depending solely in coal. I thought that the new system is to introduce more power station, nuclear power station, in order to solve amicable solution to solve our problem. But instead, you are talking about reconstruction or rebuilding the coal power station. So to me, it's something else. Mama, maybe I'll come to the second one. This one, that's why I was indicating to you that I've closed my eyes, because I was seeing the vision. The vision is so negative instead of positive. Thank you, Chairperson. So, Chairperson, lastly, this question, time and again, I'll put an example. Go to Mpumalanga. Mpumalanga alone is having plus minus 9 power stations. But electricity is so exuberant, very expensive. If you want me to give you names, I can call them names. You do have your Grill Power Station, Matra Power Station, Henrina Power Station, Arnold, Camden, Duma, Tutugani, the other one is in Balfour, I forgot his name, and Kutala Power Station. All these power stations are just at the hub of Mpumalanga. What is the same with electricity? Why is it so expensive? Why is it here? To me, it's like you go to the factory in a farm where you produce in your grapes. I think people are having their priority. Why don't you get a priority? Because it's there in the very same province. But it's so expensive compared to the rate of unemployment, which you spoke about, that you are subsidizing in terms of the poor people. And then where do you then ask that one? How do you subsidize the poor people? Why the people are buying it very expensive? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you,
Thanks, Chen. Thanks to Mr. Diamond for his presentation, which was technical. This was a technical presentation. For people who don't know about the figures, percentages, pie graphs, and so on, it's very difficult. But I'm not going to pose technical questions. I'm going to pose political questions. I just want to check, after this MYPD, will Eskom be financially independent? Because I don't think it's good that every year in, year out, the government must support these state-owned enterprises. Because the purpose of this, they must be financially independent, so that they must be able to assist communities or other entities. But as it is, the money which should be going to other directions, they only goes to state-owned enterprises. As a result, there are not enough funds to do other projects for the people. The second one is the issue of, whilst we are trying to reach this, and as you have said, it's expensive to generate electricity from coal. Do we have any other alternatives that we can put in place? And if we do have, what is our program or what is our vision moving towards that direction? And also, you complained about the issue of maintenance, because these things, they are old. So it means in this program yours, in this vision of yours, these are something that you have to take into consideration, that we need to have an alternative to avoid the issue of high cost of maintenance. And you have said this company is growing, but its returns are not growing. So why does the company grow, but its returns are not growing? The other one, you talked about 5 million customers. I'm not so sure in terms of what. Are you talking about in terms of households? Because the recent census, we are more than 50 million. And now, how many people are being supplied with electricity if you are talking about these 5 million customers. Maybe if you translate it into human person, that would be good. The other one is this issue of the interns. You said they are about 12,000. What do we get in return after those interns have qualified? Because there was this issue, I don't know whether it was Kusile, where you had to employ welders from outside the country. Have we been able to address that? Because I think after this period, we should be having qualified people so that next time we don't have to import those skills. The other one, we are busy saying we want to make profits, we want to generate funds. But there's a lot of electricity wastage. I just want to check with you. Do you know how many electricity do you generate? Do you know how many electricity do you sell? And how many electricity do you lose through stealing? Because if you can close that gap, it is the electricity where you would be making profit. But as it is, as most of my colleagues have said here, there's a lot of electricity which has been lost, and we are doing nothing about that. So can we get clarity on that? Thank you.
Thank you. I think one of the colleagues has asked this one, but I just want also to repeat it, to say Eskom has secured 80% of its coal for 5 years. If maybe you can explain what will happen after that. And then on slide 26, see, these increases are for Eskom customers. Would this mean that most residential users who are not Eskom customers would not experience these increases or decreases? The other one is on decisions or changes to the national electrification strategy, integrated resources plan of 2010. Of which is also a concern. The plan is due to be updated by March, and any possible changes have not been factored into Eskom's latest tariff increase application. Can you please comment on the risks underlying this issue? Thank you. Over to you, sir. And can we be brief and straight to the point? We've got other meetings. If we can respond up till 12:15.
Jay, we can. We certainly do that.
Sorry. And if you can maybe tell us the programs that Eskom has. I know you have programs to educate or to make the people, the society, aware of these increases. Thanks.
Okay, we'll do our best to answer all the questions, and I'll ask my colleagues to please add, and I'll direct some of the questions to them to be answered. And to be brief, I think the one thing I must say, this is not a negative presentation. It is. Reality, and it's positive. Let me just deal with a question from Honorable Groeneveld that says, what are the purposes of the hearings? Are we listening? Give me examples of what we're doing with the complaints. The purpose of the hearings is not Eskom hearings. These are hearings done by the National Energy Regulator in order to engage with the application and to allow public and stakeholders to provide input. We certainly listen to the public. I can give you that assurance. We have listened to business. We have engaged. I have engaged extensively, whether it's on radio and listening to people. We've really gone out there and listened. But it's also our responsibility to give people the reality. If we don't, I promise you, we're going to be back here creating the same mistakes we've done over the last 10 years
and having the same discussions 10 years from now. So it's very important that it's our responsibility to put down really what's the reality. And we can go through different what we've done about some of the complaints. So the issue around the poor, we've tried to address that. The issue around how do we deal with different sectors of the economy, we believe policymakers need to do that. We've done economic studies. Most economists that today comment on this has actually been commissioned by us to do work around this and the impact thereof. Then there was a question about the oversight and the ceiling of electricity. We know exactly how much electricity we generate. We know exactly how much we distribute. We know exactly how much we recover. The current, and Solo can give the numbers, and if you look at the annual results which I presented to this committee at the end of last year, we presented these numbers. When we last week we presented our six monthly results, we also presented the numbers. Our total losses from the theft of electricity is just under 2.5% of our total sales. It contributes about 1.2 billion rand of our revenue. That is the difference. So if we need 1 trillion rand of revenue for the next 5 years, for all of these things I've spoken about, this contributes 1.2 billion per year. So it is important, it is significant, and we are working on this. We're not doing nothing about it. We are working on it. This is an issue that we've also raised with legislators. You know, electricity has not been seen as a crime, the theft of electricity, and unless we strengthen the legislative environment, we're not going to be able to deal with it. And we have raised, and we have seen some support to deal with that. And Tolofelo can talk a little bit about what we're doing about that. Then you ask about our vision for electricity in the future. Really, the vision is contained within the integrated resource plan that says the country needs to double the capacity. Of the new capacity, 42% of that will be renewables, 23% will be nuclear, and the rest will be coal or imports. That is the vision that the country has actually developed about 2 years ago. You ask about the coal fields, whose ownership. The mineral resources in South Africa, for all minerals, belongs to the state. It is mined by mining companies, and so the mining companies has got the right to price the coal, whether they export it or produce it locally. What we have said is very important is that we do must make sure as a country that we use this resource of coal. And coal is not more expensive than any other option. Coal is the cheapest way to produce electricity in South Africa at this point in time. It's very important that we use this coal in order to control our energy costs. So the ownership of the fields, the resources to the state, and in terms of the mining, belongs to the mining companies. Then there was a question about a power station. What happened to it? I don't know the station. I don't know what happened. It did not belong to us. All current power stations that are operating in the municipalities, we have entered into contracts with them to keep them running. So we pay Tshwane, we pay the city of Johannesburg to keep those stations running, in order to contribute to the capacity. And our own stations, we have decommissioned or recommissioned the three, Camden, Grootvlei, and Komati, that were viable. They nearly finished. Komati's got three units left, and then we'll be finishing that program. I don't know exactly about this specific station. So if we can have the details, then we can follow it up. Are we on track for Medupi first power next year? That is still the case. Before the end of next year, first power. We had also an independent review done around that to check, get somebody else to check our program. They've confirmed that that is the case, that first power next year. There's still a lot of work to be done, but that is where we currently at in terms of the plans. And the same for Kusile, the first unit to be commissioned in 2014, towards the end of 2014. I don't know if our colleagues want to add to that.
I think, as Brian has indicated, there's quite a number of initiatives. We have the Operation Kanisa initiative, which was launched in 2010, and it's a project that we're working with in conjunction with other businesses, Business Against Crime as well, and Prime Media and so forth. And it's really about social marketing campaign, education and awareness. We go to schools, communities, launching and educating and informing them about safe and legal power use. We believe that if we didn't have that, we would have seen an increase in the amount of energy losses. When we compare internationally, these losses have actually been contained within around 8.65%, in fact, just around 2.5% on the non-technical losses themselves. And as Brian indicated, we're working with law enforcement agencies. We have seen some arrests in with regards to that. There's also some convictions that are coming that we, there are cases that have been opened. I think we currently have about 81 cases that are opened and 22 arrests and so forth. So we do believe that, yes, more can be done, and we're really working with our law enforcement agencies. I think what's important is that in the past, theft of electricity was not regarded as something that you can a crime. So we believe that we're heading towards the right direction. As Brian indicated, the losses are high, and we can provide information in terms of the kilowatt hours. I think we're losing just in excess of about 2,000 probably gigawatt hours, but we'll provide the right information.
If I can also just add on that, because hopefully it answers some of the other members' questions. So if we look at the number of these incidents, certainly we see a lot more within our informal settlements. What we would do is we will actually go in and disconnect that. But the most losses in terms of value comes from the higher users. Actually, it comes out of business. So although because it's small incidents, but the volumes are so high, so the impact is a lot bigger. So the case that most of this is just in our informal townships and our communities is actually not correct. The biggest part of it, and hence the partnership with Business Against Crime. You know, and so we all have to work on this to deal with that. To Honorable Veldsmann, in terms of your questions, I think the question is, and I hope I've got it right, the need for the increase in SOEs to be in trouble. Eskom is in a different position today. We're financially viable and sustainable. We don't get any support from government. We don't get any bailouts. Eskom has posted for the last 3 years a profit, last year over 12 billion rand, first 6 months another 12 billion rand. We have support from government. Our support from government, we received a 60 billion rand loan some years ago. That was part of this funding. So if we look at equity, that came in. And then we have a guarantee from government of 350 billion rand. And that we use to raise funding ourselves. So what is very important is that Eskom achieve a standalone investment grade rating so that we can, and the Honourable Member has made a very important point, that we on a standalone basis can raise the money we need to deal with electricity and then make sure the government can use the funds for other areas. And that's the position we want to achieve. If this application would be approved, then we will achieve that position by the end of this period, as I've indicated on one of the slides. But it's very important that we also understand it's not just Eskom's rating that's important, but also the countries. And we cannot afford the countries to be further downgraded, similarly Eskom as well, because that will mean we will not have access to raising money and we will not be able, the cost of that will be a lot higher. The second question that you asked, member, was IPPs, why foreign ownership? And this is a policy decision made by the government. So I should actually ask the question myself, but it's a policy decision made by the policymakers, that we do need foreign ownership. And it's very important. We recognize we can't do this alone ourselves, as Eskom, and others need to come in. And so that's very important. But we must understand as South Africans that the return requirements are different. You're going to use for the IPP, so I can give you to build a wind farm in South Africa. I've given you the price, so South African consumers will pay more than what they can pay for electricity in South Africa. That money will go to both foreign investors and South African investors. All the debt will come out of South African banks. So you have South African banks funding foreign ownership, and the returns, I guess, will not stay in South Africa. But that's something that government has decided on, and we're implementing that policy. The Honourable Member spoke about the BHP bulletin contract, I think the price that they pay. When are we going to break the ice? We have submitted, we only have the one agreement with bulletin for the two smelters. We have submitted that to the regulator as well now, to review those contracts. So we have done that to break the ice.
Was it done in 2012?
These contracts were entered into before 1994, right. In the early 90s, that linked the price of electricity to the price of commodities. When we submitted our application a week later, we also submitted these contracts to the regulator for review. So the regulator will go through a public process to review those contracts. We don't know what the outcome would be, but they would review it. Then I think there was a question around nuclear. Again, the choices that is in IRP, which says nuclear, coal, renewables, are again policy choices. It's a government decision. And it's really, if we look as a country, we have to make some choices as a country. The first choice is, what do we want to have in terms of CO2 emissions? So although coal is cheaper, it has a lot more CO2 emissions. Now, if we keep on using coal, we believe coal should play a role going forward, but we should use it cleaner. But the question is, if we're not going to use coal, what else are we going to use? And that is, for baseload energy, nuclear is determined. And it's correct, it costs a lot to build nuclear. But once we run it, it's cheaper. But you have to pay for the cost of producing it. And then renewables. But that is the choices that were made. So why nuclear? It was a policy decision. Then the Honourable Member at the end asked a question about protection of the poor. Why price fixing and the condition of municipalities? If I can just deal with this... Municipalities has got a constitutional right to supply electricity. So we do not allow them, it's not that we allow them. They firstly have a right to supply basic services, and electricity is one of them. That's why the electricity distribution restructuring efforts never actually came to fruition. That's the first question. The second thing I'd like to make is that the regulator, NERSA, actually provides a license for them to supply. So we cannot supply municipal customers without municipalities agreeing to that. The third thing is the regulator does provide at best guidance to municipality as to the electricity prices. So although we indicate here that we will charge an average 13% from us to the municipal customers, what they charge their customers is really up to their own processes as determined by their own legislation. And so that is a very important process. And then the fourth thing I'd like to say is that most of the revenue for a municipality, most of their income comes from the sale of electricity. If we change that, you change the whole funding model for a municipality, and that is certainly used to help with the rest of the services within the municipal area. So it is not that we allow them to do that. It is really a question around... it's a constitutional right, and they supply those. So we supply municipalities, and they then supply their customers, residential customers. Then there was a question about when will Eskom become independent of the state. Like I said, we currently are not getting ongoing support from the state. We have the support in terms of the guarantees. We have indicated when we will achieve cost-effective tariffs. We should achieve our investment-grade rating. We can do that very quickly if the tariffs change very quickly, or in our case, we proposed a five-year period in order to make sure that we achieve our ratios to achieve an investment-grade rating. Then, in terms of Honorable Sabanda, there was a lot of questions about what about capacity beyond 2018. It is a concern, and that's why we've indicated that we would need to make a decision now around the IRP. And IRP has indicated that we will then add further renewables, further nuclear, imports of hydro, and then also coal. So that is IRP. Then again, I think we have spoken about the municipalities. Why Eskom is allowing municipalities to supply electricity? It's not that we allow them. It's their right, and they are licensed to do so by the regulator. And we are only licensed to supply in our areas of supply. And the 5 million customers that we supply are our customers that we're licensed to supply, and we cannot supply a customer within the municipal area. So we have looked at the protection of the poor in terms of the Eskom customer base and have proposed the tariff structure. But how municipalities apply that is really up to each municipality in the country, and that can be different for all the municipalities, and that's allowed for in terms of the legislation. I think I've dealt with the issue of theft of electricity. We know exactly how much that is, and we do monitor it. It's not that we don't monitor it. We do monitor it throughout the country. And then there was a question around historical value and replacement value. I think I have addressed that in the presentation. Then the issue around nuclear. Currently, in terms of the running costs, Coburg is certainly one of our cheapest stations. But nuclear is very expensive, more expensive than coal to build. And I think the member asked the question, when do we get to inflation? We can only get to inflation if we do not continue expanding. Let's take, for instance, we currently have a coal base, and it includes the cost of adding new coal. If we keep on building coal, then we should be able to get very close to inflation-linked tariff increases. If you add renewables, 30 cents or 70 cents versus 2 rand, the price will go up. You're going to be higher than inflation. If you add nuclear, because of the capital, it's going to be higher. You're going to go higher than inflation. So it all depends on where we're at. And in this case, as we expand electricity, we can't get to inflation-linked increases. And if you choose different technologies, obviously it's going to be a lot higher. So hopefully that deals with that. So nuclear is a lot more expensive in terms of capital, although it's cheaper to run at the end of the day. Do you want to add to that?
Just to add on the question of municipalities, I wanted to highlight, and maybe it would come to you to answer your question as well. The municipal customers, residential customers, for example, when the regulator introduced inclining block tariff, it was applicable to the customers that municipalities supply as well. But how they then implemented was obviously a different story, as Brian has indicated. So I think that's the point to highlight, that, you know, the regulator would regulate their prices as well. In terms, and it's in line with the Municipal Finance Management Act, and their increases would be effective from 1st of July. So there's a process that would be followed. So the increases that you're seeing on slide 26 are specific to Eskom's residential customers, and there would be a process for the municipal customers as well. But I think I think that covers it.
Chair, just quickly some of the other questions from Honourable Sibanda. The issue around Kaborobasa and versus coal. Kaborobasa, we currently are buying the power from Kaborobasa, and there are work that is being done to expand Kaborobasa. But coal, in terms of current base load in South Africa, is still the cheapest option versus nuclear and versus solar. And I've given you here the numbers. Then there's a question about revenues and borrowing and equity for this. What do we do with our profits? Our profits are reinvested back in the business to go back and expand and to cover our interests, as I indicated, to pay back our interest on our debt. Why not more nuclear to solve? Why are we rebuilding coal fire stations? It was the cheapest options to bring back capacity. As I said, there will be more nuclear in terms of IRP. It will be more expensive to build, and that is something, again, that we have given an indication of. Then there was a question about Mpumalanga. Why is the price of electricity so low or so high in Mpumalanga? Most of the stations are there. The price of electricity that we charge for every of our 5 million customers is not determined by Eskom, it's determined by the regulator. So we cannot charge a customer different prices. The regulator sets the price, and that is the price we charge the municipality, that's the price we charge the mine, that's the price that we charge the residential customer. And we have no discretion to change the actual pricing around that. And so if the country needs to move to, let's say, Cape Town paying more than Mpumalanga, that is something that we need to put forward to the regulator for them to then determine exactly how that should be done. Chair, then Honourable Jacobs asked some questions around when will Eskom be financially independent? As we indicated on the slide, I can go back. We've hoped to simplify the presentation on slide 43.
would indicate then when, if we achieve these ratios, the red lines, is really when we will achieve a standalone investment grade rating from the rating agencies. Year-on-year support from the government for SOEs, as I've indicated, we have received an equity loan from government, 60 billion. It is over and done with. It was done with in 2011. We don't receive any further injections from government, and we have a guarantee that we can use for our borrowings. Currently, Eskom is fundamentally in a different financial position and is not dependent on year-on-year government support. Then there was a question that it's expensive to generate electricity from coal. It is not expensive, as I've indicated. It costs us 30 cents to generate electricity from coal in 5 years' time, and it will cost us 2 rand, 12 cents to generate it from wind or from solar. And it is not expensive. It's South Africa's cheapest source of electricity. Why are we growing? Our returns are not growing. Our returns are growing over this period. The reason why the returns has been kept that low is really to make sure we smooth the increase of electricity. If we have to achieve our 8.1% return immediately, that means we will have to immediately increase the price of electricity by more than 16% if we've indicated. Then there's a question about why do we say 5 million customers? Are we referring to households or 150 million customers? I think firstly, when we say 5 million customers, these are the bills that we send out, so it can be a household, and many people stay in the household. But it's also important that I stress this again. We do not supply most of the residential customers in South Africa. It's supplied by the municipality. So we may have one customer called Etiquen, but all the people supplied by Etiquenni is not accounted for by Eskom because they're not Eskom customers, they are Etiquenni's customers. So that is the difference between 5 and 50. And then how many people have got access to electricity today? Over 83% of South Africans have got access to electricity. I think some of that was also indicated for in the census. The interns, what are we getting? And the foreign welders, about 5% of the skills that we have are foreign. We have put in place a welding school at Eskom to train people up to be able to replace the need for foreign. But some of those skills actually do not exist in South Africa. So we have invested, we have created entities to actually start preparing people to do that. Then there was a question about the theft and we're doing nothing. I can give you the assurance, as Chola said, that we're actually spending quite a lot of money to make sure that we deal with this, and we would appreciate support from legislators around strengthening that environment as well. Chair, to come to your question, 80% of the coal supply for the next 5 years, what about thereafter? Thereafter is a big concern. We estimate that we need between about 10 to 15 new coal mines to open up. We have about a 41 million tons a year shortfall in coal for our existing power stations. So it is something that government and the industry and ourselves must look at, and we have a long-term coal strategy to deal with this. And hence our view that coal is certainly a very strategic resource within the country. Chair, then your comment, most residential customers, you're correct, are not Eskom customers. Actually, most end users, customers, the business across the road, the bank, is not an Eskom customer. It's the city of Cape Town's customer. All the suburbs are the city of Cape Town's, not Eskom customers. And so what we charge is really only to our customers. And that's the difference between the 5 and the 51 million South Africans. Then IRT is going to be updated. We have not taken into account any decisions that are not made in our application. We cannot apply an application for what we think government will decide. We've only accounted for decisions that government has made in our application, and we have indicated that we believe that decisions in terms of the future is urgent and must be made on an urgent basis so that we can plan for that. And then maybe Chaucer can talk about our program to educate society about tariffs and what we've done and what we plan to do.
Thank you, Chair. I think one of the most important things that we did was to ensure, first of all, even before we submitted our application to engage with our stakeholders very intensively and extensively. We did that before that so as to educate them on electricity. And as we speak, we have a very intensive in different provinces to engage with our stakeholders. We use media, radio, print, video, and social media very intensively. And also, this type of a presentation to Parliament is one of those things that provide us with a platform to educate the community. One of the other things when I spoke about before, so as to ensure that our fellow South Africans do have a deeper understanding of electricity and its workings, we have what is referred to as the state of the system address almost every quarter. And almost every week we issue out a state of the system. It does not so much talk about MIPD3 application, but it informs our public about the state of the system, and therefore we end up with an educated customer and South African that are able to engage. We also have a 49 million campaign which talks to the use of electricity, safety, and why it's important to do so. But mostly, Chair, I'm delighted, and I thought that Brian would also allude to this. About a year ago, almost, Brian took a decision to appoint for every province a head of a province, referred to as a general manager for the province, very, very senior officer of ESCOM, to look after our engagement with the stakeholders. Almost 60% of their performance is judged by the manner in which they engage with the public. What do I mean? In Nelspruit, for example, Honorable Sibanda, there will be a very senior person. We don't have to refer any query anymore directly to Megawatt Park in Bloemfontein. So which means that we are able to quickly, you know, and nimbly deal with most of the major issues that may be raised by our customers. One of the issues where probably the National Council of Provinces would be very useful for us is to getting access as to the provincial legislatures and gaining access for our members. And Chair, in conclusion, I think I will provide you with the list of the names of these senior officers of the company that are based in every province with their contact details so that members can be able to contact them as and when they have any problems they want to deal with regarding ESCOM. Or in fact, also, to come and make presentation, they're highly trained on the MIPD3 application itself. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I was going to request for that list. So you read my mind. Also, if you can supply us with the information on the this program, yeah, the 49M, so that this can sit in our constituency offices, so that people can, you know, on their own, with the help of members when they are there, to actually understand what is really going on. And also, if we talk of radio stations, I want to understand that you are also talking of community radio stations. Yeah. Let me thank you so much for the informative information, and to also wish you all the best for the festive. Until we meet next year, we will still keep in touch, communicate. If there are there is information that we need, we will definitely, through Mapelo and Karen, communicate with you. And let me thank them for actually sending the presentation early and with the communication flowing every time. And they actually knock on our door every time they want to meet the students.